Please stand by. The conference is about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to this IBM Put the E's in RI and DB2's conference call. Today's call is being recorded. For opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the conference over to your moderator for today, Ms. Sally Tuscany. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Tony, and thank you all very much for joining our call today. On behalf of IBM, I'm thrilled to welcome you to the discussion about referential integrity and how IBM has enhanced our database tools with this unique technology. We have two fabulous speakers for you today. Our first one is Ernie Manso. Ernie is one of our most senior IT specialists, has worked with the tools and with this technology for several years. Our second speaker is Barry Davis, and Barry is from one of our development partners, Rocket Software. Again, thank you very much for your time today, and I'd like to turn the call over to Ernie Manso. Ernie?
Thank you, Sally, and good morning, everyone. And again, we appreciate you taking time out to listen to this conference call today. We'll be starting on slide two, the session agenda. So today what we're going to do is to talk just briefly about referential integrity, some terminology, and just an overview of what RI is. Then we're going to talk about DB2 Grouper. We'll discuss product architecture, an overview of product functionality, and then some terminology related to this technology. Then we'll see a couple of product usage scenarios where I'll take you through some of the user interface and explain how to interact with the tool. And then I'm going to be turning the call over to Barry Davis to discuss DB2 Recovery Expert and how it uses this Grouper technology. And then we'll have a Q&A session at the end of the presentation. So I'm on slide three now. And this is probably a familiar example in that this is part of the version 7, version 8 DB2 installation verification sample tables. But it gives us a good example of referential integrity and relationships within DB2 tables. So in this example, the employee table is a dependent table of department. Department is considered a parent table. And in defining referential integrity relationships, the DBA will create, using DDL, data definition language, a references clause that defines, among other things, the primary key, identifies the foreign key relationship and names it, names the relationship, and then defines a reference to the parent table, which basically defines how DB2 should treat the contents of that parent table column that's defined in the relationship on the event of in this case, a delete. So we can see in this schematic, for example, that there is a reference defined for both the employee as it relates to the department and the department as it relates to the employee. And as we can see in this case, the references would, on the event of an employee row being deleted, any corresponding department row that referenced that employee row that was deleted, that particular column would be set null. Now on slide four, we see that we're going to talk a little bit about terminology, and again, this is terminology that DBAs should be familiar or comfortable with, so we're not going to dwell a lot on these. But just to keep in mind that a parent table is a table of the primary key. A parent key is a column or a set of columns that provides a unique identifier to the rows of that table. It's also known as a primary key. A unique index is required to ensure that the parent key doesn't contain duplicate values, and referential integrity recommends that you create a unique index on that column that constitutes the parent key value. The next slide, slide five, we talk a little bit more about terminology. We talk about foreign keys. Foreign keys refer to a unique primary key of the parent table. And this is where you name the columns of the parent key. This is a key that's actually defined over the child table. The child table is a table that references the parent table with the foreign key clause. The referential constraints composed of three elements, a constraint name. The columns that are named comprising the foreign key that's created over the child table. And then the reference clause, which contains the constraint rules, delete, set null, those sort of constraint rules. So version 8, when let's talk a second about referential integrity. While it ensures that relationships are maintained across actions through DML, things like deleting child table rows and ensuring that the resulting columns that reference those child rows and the parent table rows are handled correctly, DB2 tends to do a lot of work in checking these relationships and ensuring that the data is maintained in a referentially intact way. In a lot of environments where there's a significant amount of insert or delete activity, this can constitute a very significant amount of overhead. So a lot of customers elect to, instead of using DB2 enforcements, elect to maintain data integrity through application enforcements, and we'll talk about that in a second. So starting with version 8, we introduced something called an informational referential constraint. And what this is a referential constraint that is not enforced by DB2 during normal DML operations. So as you can see in the bullet, DB2 ignores any constraints during inserts, updates, and delete operations. In addition, some utilities will ignore these constraints. So, for example, check data and load will ignore the constraints. Quiet's table space set, on the other hand, recognizes these constraints. And so we can use non-enforced or informational referential constraints in version 8 to relate multiple table spaces together that may need to be handled in a complete set for things like backup and recovery. And yet we don't incur the incremental overhead of a DB2 enforced RI constraints. And the reason is again, especially in environments like OLTP environments where there are lots of inserts and deletes, data warehousing environments where there's a lot of activity, it allows us to avoid the overhead of enforcement on DB2. And in version 8, for example, it allows more queries to qualify for automatic query rewrite. So to implement an informational referential constraint on an unenforced constraint, you use the not enforced option in either a create table or an alter table statement. And you can see the note down here, and we'll talk more in a second about this, but you always want to make sure that if you take the route of defining referential integrity through an unenforced constraint, that you always want to make sure that your application verifies that the data is relationally intact. So we know that there's a lot of overhead associated with the DB2 enforced RI. So slide 7 talks about what I think most customers have concluded is that the best way and the most efficient way from a performance perspective to perform referential integrity checking is within the application. So non-enforced referential constraint is when the application process verifies that the data in a referential integrity way is intact. So for example, when I insert a row into a dependent table, the application is going to verify that foreign key value exists in the parent table. So obviously there's a performance benefit when I do this. There's also, it makes for a simplistic data modeling model, so I don't have to identify within the data model these enforcements. However, the disadvantage is that it requires strict adherence and requires all of the applications that update tables involved in these relationships to adhere to the same set of rules. In other words, everybody's got to play by the same relationship rules. When that doesn't happen, then you end up with potential data integrity issues. The other is that it's hard over time to keep track of the relationships and enforcements that's embedded into the application. We're going to see how Grouper, however, is going to allow you to describe these relationships, non-enforced application relationships, in a metadata that you can then refer to in guiding your application's design or testing or for whatever purpose. So before we leave this concept of DB2 relationships, there are other and I'll use the term loosely, relationships that could be considered from the standpoint of not so much referential integrity, but how certain objects are related to one another. So, for example, I can infer relationships between tables when I look at specific bound application plans or packages that refer to a group of tables. Those certainly could be related to one another. And obviously, when I'm talking about DB2 large objects, LOBs, there is a relationship between the LOB table and the auxiliary table for DB2. And then over on the right-hand side, there's also a relationship that's actually important, and when Barry talks about the recovery expert a little later in the presentation, he'll refer to this again, but there is a relationship in terms of looking at the commit scope within any single DB2 logical unit of work, and from the start of task until the end of the logical unit of work or the commit, any tables that were updated by that logical unit of work certainly are related to each other from the standpoint of recovery. So that's another place the DB2 recovery log has information about this type of relationship, and we'll discuss that a little later in the presentation, how Grouper provides a way to discover these sorts of relationships. So where do I look for relationship information? And we should be on slide 9 now. Obviously, if it's in forced RI, it's going to be stored in the DB2 catalog. And for version 8, the catalog also contains information about non-enforced RI. And you can discover these relationships through catalog navigation tools such as the DB2 administration tool. OEM DB2 modeling tools such as Rational, Bachman, Irwin, they also allow you to transcribe within metadata how the objects are related to one another. And that's going to be dependent upon how you maintain your model and your data modeling tool. We can find information about relationships and applications programs. Again, those could be hard to decipher or identify which application programs need to be looked at, and are only going to be useful if everybody adheres to the relationship model. And then a lot of popular application software vendors, ERP vendors, for example, provide documentation about their data model that describes relationships. However, those aren't necessarily updated, and some of the ERP vendors, for example, these designs are considered proprietary, and it's hard to discover this information. And then least reliable is application design documentation. So the value of this data is directly proportional to the amount of effort that you spend keeping documentation updated. And as a programmer, back in my early days, I tended not to focus on keeping my documentation current. So, again, the value of this data tends to age very rapidly as the application matures. And then we're going to see in a minute how now DB2 Grouper, through its metadata, allows an additional place to look for relationship information. So why is RI data important? Why is it important to understand about relationships? Because these relationships can be used for various types of DB2, DBA, and application developer tasks, such as planning an effective backup and recovery approach or strategy, archiving and relocating data, data replication. Test data generation is an important use where you have a very complex data model in production. You want to create a test, unit test or systems test sample of your production data, but for it to be useful and create a valid test case, you have to make sure that those test objects are related in the same way as the production database. Capacity planning and analyzing performance, and then application object change management, specifically migrating sets of objects from one subsystem to the other, and certainly an object alteration. All of these activities revolve around understanding RI, either enforced or unenforced relationships. So I'm now on slide 11, and this just kind of details some more specific usages. And again, later in the presentation, Barry's going to talk about Recovery Expert. But Recovery Expert Grouper responds to the need to recover data to a specific point in time and make sure that all of the objects that are related described by Grouper are recovered at that same point in time. Grouper helps you determine the set of objects that need to be recovered simultaneously from an RI perspective. Test Database Generator is another tool from IBM, and this allows me to understand what constitutes an intact and complete set of test data from a relationship standpoint, and manages the extracting and transformation of a subset of this data from your operational or your production database. And then also just data administration, just general day-to-day DBA activity. There's a need to understand relationships between tables, and not necessarily all the information is in the catalog. So slide 12 kind of recaps what we just discussed in this first part of the presentation. So what we're dealing with here is this: there are many relationships between DB2 objects in an application environment. Some of these relationships can be discovered easily. Obviously, DB2 enforced RI, that information is in the DB2 catalog. Other relationships are harder to find, like we've discussed, maybe embedded within applications code, maybe embedded in application documentation, which may or may not be consistent or correct. As the complexity of the relationship increases, it's harder to find and discover these relationships, and hard to keep track of this information. And relationships can be dynamic. So consider the situation where I may have an understanding today of the relationships between multiple table spaces from an application recovery perspective, and then an application program change is made that introduces or draws a new table into the application. Unless that's documented, then I may end up at a recovery scenario incorrectly recovering my application because I've not taken into account the application change which drew this new table or this new table space into the relationship. And so it's important, especially for disaster recovery or application local site recovery, it's critical to understand where this, how this data is related, and you need to be able to treat this information in a coherent manner. So in order to help you do this, we have introduced some technology. It's called DB2 Grouper. Let me clarify something. You don't buy Grouper. Grouper is not a standalone. It is a standalone product, but it is not a separately priced product. It is a component of several of the DB2 data management tools for both ZOS and multi-platform, and we'll see in the next slide the tools that include Grouper. It's a client-server component. The idea is it allows you to group tables for a single DB2 ZOS subsystem. Grouper can help you discover, record relationships, and allow administration of group information that can be used by a number of tools. In the next slide, slide 13, lists some of the tools that use Grouper today. So, for example, the DB2 Data Archive Expert for ZOS, the DB2 Test Database Generator for ZOS and multi-platform, and the DB2 Recovery Expert for ZOS. These are all products that currently use Grouper, and Grouper is shipped as a separate install but part of the orderable product for these four offerings. And expect to see over time, as we introduce new technology, where it makes sense, where understanding relationships is important for the functionality or the functioning of the product, expect that we'll include Grouper into those offerings as well. So I'm on slide 14 now. So what is in Grouper? So Grouper contains these components. Grouper administration, it allows you to schedule and execute the various Grouper functions via the client user interface. It's used to edit and create specifications that control a process called group discovery. Once groups have been discovered, it allows you to administer and edit the contents of the groups. It also allows you to define non-DB2 enforced relationships, not stored in the DB2 catalog, but stored in the Grouper metadata. It also ships a unit of work discovery. So what this does is it searches the DB2 log records on the server for relationships. Unfortunately, I didn't have an opportunity to include slides about this particular component, so let me just take a second and describe how this works. So using the client user interface, I specify either with a starting and ending RBA or LSRN, a set of log records that I'm interested in looking at. So an example of this might be I want to understand which objects are updated by a particular batch application process, for example. So that job may have run last night, and I know the start and end time. So what I can do is go to the Bootstrap data set, and I can derive what the starting and ending RBA would have been around the window that particular batch process ran. Using those LSRNs or those RBAs, I then interact with the client user interface and create what's called a unit of work discovery. Using those starting and ending points, it then searches the log and looks for units of recovery that group multiple tables together. So at the output from the unit of work discovery would be a set of grouper-defined groups that would constitute tables that were updated within one single logical unit of work. Very interesting and very useful information when planning for recovery, and also gives me some documentation as to what set of objects a certain particular application's process may have updated. Group discovery is a stored procedure that's, again, managed by grouper, and it's actually what discovers the relationships between tables in the database. And it contains a group view. It's basically an SQL view that provides information that helps examine the various groups. Next slide talks a little bit about prerequisites. So the grouper client user interface, it runs on Windows XP or some similar Windows environment. Modest requirements in terms of a client machine, so any Pentium 3 or equivalent processor will work. 256 megabytes of RAM, requires DB2 Connect, so 7.2 FixPack 10 or greater is a minimum requirement for that. DB2 grouper metadata, these are a set of tables that are defined and cataloged into the ZOS catalog for the DB2 that you're processing against. And the DB2 grouper stored procedures need to be installed as well. For that, we require you to be version 7 with the listed PTF and requires at least OS 390, 210 or greater. USS, WLM needs to be goal mode. RRS needs to be active, and you need to be Java, JRE 131. So I'm sure everybody is pretty much at these prerequisites at this point in time. So a little bit about grouper terminology. So group is a collection of related tables, and in this example, this is actually a screenshot from the client user interface. Group underscore one is the group in this case. A version is a collection of groups, so I can have multiple versions. And then within a set, and a set is a collection of one or more versions. So this allows me to perform iterative group discovery process within a version or a set. Starting point table is an important concept in that the table is used, is specified by the user to limit the scope of the group discovery. So you can use starting point table and parent table more or less interchangeably. So this is basically the anchor point for any single group discovery operation. Next slide, this should be slide 17. This gives you a choice. We have two choices of user interfaces from the client side. We have a command line, or not command line, but a line, Windows line user interface, and we'll see an example of that a little further in the presentation. Or you can use the grouper launch pad. And the launch pad contains basically radio buttons that kind of step you through defining non-enforced RI and then preparing groups to hold the output of a group discovery execution, and basically steps you through the process of basically acting as a hand-holding user interface. It's optional. And there's a radio button to disable that launch pad, but at least for new users, it's a good way to get a good comfort level and look and feel of the product. So slide 18 shows, and we're going to now go through a couple of examples, and the first is we're going to create a group with a starting point table that has been defined with DB2RI. So this shows the radio button has been clicked, so we see the launch pad. So the first thing that we'll do is we'll click the Create a Set to Hold Groups button. And then when we create a set, we're required to give it a name. Name can be 256 characters, free format. One comment is that any field that you enter in on the user interface is case sensitive. So we need to make sure that we're sensitive to that. The next thing that we do, and we're now on slide 20, is we also need to give it a version. So in this example, I'm just going to default to version 1. The next slides go through the group discovery options. So the first thing that we're going to do is that we're only interested in referential integrity relationships. If we were interested in drawing other types of relationships into the group discovery, maybe I had run a group discovery through a log crawl, or I may have run a group discovery looking for relationships within DB2 packages, I would pick the all reference, all relationship types radio button. But in this case, I'm only going to be looking at RI. So now on slide 22, this is where I define the starting point table. I can either specify a name table, or I can select a search list and use wildcarded characters for both the creator and the table name of the starting point table. Slide 23 shows the result of this, and this gives me a list of objects, and you can see in this case I only would have had one object presented on the left-hand side. I select the object that I'm interested in using as my starting point table by clicking the arrow button to move it over to the selected side of the panel. Once I've identified the starting point table, and again, I can have multiple starting points, but for the case of this scenario, I'm only going to have one starting point table for this group discovery. Slide 25 then talks about boundary. Boundary objects are objects that need to be included in the group, but I don't want to use it to draw any additional tables into the group. So in this example, if I had specified a second table, that table would be included in the group, but if there were other relationships to that second table, those child tables would not be included in the group discovery. Slide 26 then talks about ignored relationships. And if I have a relationship where I might draw a table into the group that I'm not interested in, I can exclude that table by adding it to the ignored relationships list. And when that happens, the table that I'm specifying in the ignored relationships panel won't be part of the resultant group that's created through group discovery. And then the final option is the additional relationships panels. And this is where I may have a table that I want to include in the group, but I don't believe that either through a non-enforced relationship, unit of work relationship, that it's going to be found. Basically, it allows me to manually add tables into the group as part of the group discovery process. 28, so once I've created the parameters, the next thing that I do is I run the group discovery. And basically what that does is fire off a stored procedure to discover the relationships between the tables in the databases and then groups the tables based on these relationships. 29, and I've skipped a few slides, but once I've set up group discovery, it then comes back and gives me a validation screen, and this is telling me the group discovery settings that are going to be applied for this particular version of the group discovery process. I've got one starting point table specified. I've got three relationships that are potentially going to be used for the non-enforced RI. The next slide. Once I start the job discovery process, it FTPs a job to the ZOS server. There's a status screen that allows you to check the status of the group discovery job as it's running. I can either monitor the execution of the discovery job through this dialog, or I can monitor it through ISPF. Once the job completes, Then I can see the result, and this shows the resulting group, and we see the group name and the version name that we specified as part of the group discovery option setup. Once we open the version up, we then see a group icon that will be present upon the completion of a group discovery process. Slide 33 then shows us, when we open up that icon, it then shows us all of the tables that were discovered through group discovery. So project is the parent table. The other tables are related children that were discovered through group discovery. Slide 34 shows an example of how DB2 Data Archive Expert then would use this group in order to perform a to build a archive specification. In this case, I specify that the project table is my starting point table. By specifying a Y in the find related tables, Data Archive Expert then calls grouper, and then we can see on the bottom part of the slide, this is the result of the group discovery call, and these are the related tables to project as we discovered through our earlier group discovery execution within grouper. So slide 35 is the second example, where the first example talked about group discovery from a DB2 enforcement perspective. I can also use grouper to define within the metadata unenforced relationships. So this is an example where I can specify, again, I specify a starting point table. So I can either specify the exact table names, or I can see a using a wildcard, I can get a list of objects that qualify to that wildcard pattern. The next slide, which is slide 34, then shows once I've got the tables identified in my relationship, in this case, C proj 1 is the parent, C imp proj act 1 is a dependent child, I then can connect columns between the starting point table, in this case progno, and the dependent column of the dependent child, which is progno in C imp proj act 1. So the next slide, which is 35, just shows an second table because I wanted to create a parent table and two dependent children. So the same process is in effect here. Slide 38 then shows how I set up group discovery. So similar to what I had just done in the first example, I run group discovery, submits an FTP as a job to perform the group discovery process. And then slide 39 shows the resulting group that was created. And in this case, CPROJ1 was the parent table or the starting point table. And then PROJ ACT1 and IMP PROJ ACT1 were both the dependent children's that were discovered by virtue of the unenforced RI that I edited in the grouper user interface. Okay, so now I'm going to pass the presentation over to Barry Davis. Barry Davis is a product specialist for one of our development partners, Rocket Software. Barry's going to take us through DB2 Recovery Expert for ZOS, which is one of the data management tools which uses grouper. So, Barry, take it away.
Thank you, Ernie, and thank you. That was a great explanation of grouper. Now that we all kind of understand what it, how it's defined, we're going to try and put some of those to use in the tools that we have. I wish we had time to show you all the tools that we use grouper in, but today we're just going to finish up with Recovery Expert. Recovery Expert is a product that we've had on the market for a while now, and it allows you to analyze recovery, helps you decide what is the best choice from options that it will display to you for different recovery scenarios depending on the type of point-in-time recovery you've picked. Then it goes in and assists you in building the JCL and setting it all up ready to run. So on slide 41, a little bit more about the selection of objects that Recovery Expert will allow you to do. You can obviously go in and pick, you know, table A, table B, or table space A, or database, or whatever name you want explicitly. or there's pattern capabilities and masking, or there's the grouper sets. And we'll see in our tree of objects that we want to recover that we have different groupings, and a grouper set is one of the optional ones. Also, if you're familiar with the automation tool and you've built backup and recovery strategies and automation tool, that will allow you to select that if you want. On slide 42, then the next step would be after you've picked your objects you want to recover, then you would pick the recovery points. And Recovery Expert allows you a number of different options there. Obviously, the current. If you want to try and find a quiet time where this group of objects are recoverable to with no unit of works going on, we also in Recovery Expert have a log analysis engine that will allow us to do these quiet point discoveries that then Recovery Expert can utilize as the point in time to recover to. And it will also help you build undo redos if you need that. Slide 43, different types of recoveries that we will support in here right now is obviously application, drop recovery. We have components in Recovery Expert that allow you to do drop recovery and rebuild and recover the objects. Multiple objects, single objects, the dependency analysis, which we bring in grouper for, the quiet point analysis, which I mentioned, and system restore. Slide 44, in the grouper-related objects, Recovery Expert gives you two avenues of using grouper sets for recovery. And it's a very key component because when you're trying to do a recovery, it's not the best time to be doing the analysis of the relationships. So hopefully you have your grouper sets already defined. We can come in, and with Recovery Expert, the first one allows you to view the grouper sets from the Recovery Expert interface, and you can pick and choose or choose the whole group. And the other method that we use is an automatic component. All you know maybe at the beginning of the recovery is that table A needs to be recovered. And you can just pick that out of the pick list and then have Recovery Expert interrogate the grouper set, and it'll automatically bring in the other objects that are related, and then you can pick your recovery point. So what I'm going to do is walk you through some screens. The first example where I just pick from a grouper set and pick the objects from that grouper set for recovery, and I'll show you a few extra screens of Recovery Expert so that you get a feel for it, and then I'll show you the second example, how it expands automatically. But this first screen on page 45 is our beginning point, if you will, and we tell the system that we want to start a recovery and tell it which location that's defined to the product that we want to do the recovery on. In my case, it's I81A, and we just click Next. This is a wizard. Then after we get into the tree, once we've gone into the location, a tree will come up of objects, if you will, categorized, obviously, stow group, database, table space, tables, plans, packages. And one of them that I have circled here is the grouper groups. So I can start expanding the grouper groups down to where I want to find the object that I may have to do the recovery, and I see from that display that the, in this case, the RE test, ACT, and department employee are all related in a grouper group. And at this point in time, I really don't care the definition is what I'm using. The metadata that was defined from me building the group earlier on is telling me now, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's DB2RI or application enforced, I know that this group is related and defined for me, so I need to use that. So I then can select, so if we go to 48, we just highlight, use the caret pointer to move over into the selected objects what we want to run a recovery on. And then go to 49. We get our opportunity, and I won't repeat this for the second example, but we get our opportunity now to find our recovery point. And we can do just a simple recover to current. Or if I need more detail on that, I can pick a timestamp, and then you can go over to the explicit click, which I didn't circle, but under timestamp, and then on 4051, I start seeing a selection of recovery points based off of the quiet time in this particular case. So it's showing me what a report that we can run from Recovery Expert using the log tool engine and discovering quiet points for this set of objects that we want to recover. And if you needed to run a newer one, you just click Run New Report. The wizard will walk you through that. I didn't put all those screens in here. Also, we can ask to pick a recovery point, just go looking at what we call historical events, which is your quiesces that are in the catalog or the full image copies or whatever. So we present three different sets depending on what type of recovery you need to do. So you choose one of those recovery points, then come back and click Generate, and the tool then generates a set of options for you, plans of different types of recovery, recovery using the recovery utility, recovery using DSN1 copy, recovery using undo redos, again, depending, and we try to weight this, as you can see the little numbers in the bracket costing, and we try to weight that, helping you decide what is the most efficient recovery that you can run as far as overhead and time. And then it will generate the JCL, which is on 4054, an example of recovery JCL. There's lots of steps within that, but you have the recovery JCL built. You can submit it right from the graphical interface to the ZOS environment, or you can export this recovery JCL to a data set on ZOS and then go over and launch it from there if you wish. You have both choices. So on 4054.5, I start my second example. Now, in this example, again, I have a table that I need recovering, and so I go to my pick list, and this time I've expanded the tree out by just the table's names, and it has masking and filtering and things like that, but I come up with my list of tables that are in the RE test, and I see, and department is the one I need to recover. So I just highlight the department one, move it over to the selected objects, and go to next. Now when I walk through picking my recovery point, I also want to bring in grouper and say, okay, grouper, on a catalog-wide, check the object that I wish to recover and help me find everything that is related to it. And it will do that from the set. So I bring in that, say, okay, I want to use the grouper set catalog-wide, or you can use different ones, again, depending on what grouper set you have defined from using the grouper interface. Next, page 57, then shows the selected related table. So it is automatically found for me, because I wanted to recover department table, that these relationships exist, and we give you a definition coming from the grouper metadata explaining what they are, and saying that you need to recover these objects as a set because to maintain the RI integrity. And I'll say, okay, I want to accept that. Then we generate the plans. Again, your choice of plans on what recovery you might want to do. The one I expanded is just using the recovery utility. As you can see, there's lots of different steps in there, and you can expand those out and review them. If we're happy with that, we build our JCL and execute our recovery. I think that is that's a very quick overview of how Recovery Expert utilizes the grouper set. Again, the other products that utilize grouper sets that are very important is like the test database generator tool, and maybe at another time we can go into that one a little bit. But right now, if you have any questions on grouper or on Recovery Expert, Tony, why don't you see if we can open up the questions for us.
Thank you, sir. If you would like to ask a question today, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that's star 1 if you have a question at this time. We'll pause for just a moment to give everyone a chance to signal. And we'll go to Ted Flowers. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning. I have a question about the unit of work discovery feature for Grouper. Does that provide for a given starting and ending point when it's doing the log scan, does that provide a list of plans and or packages, including DB2 utilities, that operate on that particular object that you selected?
Ted, yeah, this is Ernie. And no, it's actually going to give you just information from a object perspective. Currently, the recovery log, I believe, we don't include the package in the log header, if I remember correctly. But what you're going to do is that by running group discovery with the log crawl, it's going to give you a list, you know, within each unit of recovery, the tables that were affected on, but no information about packages or plans.
Thanks, Ernie.
As a reminder, that's star 1 at this time. If you would like to ask a question, star 1. And with no further questions left in the queue, I would like to turn the conference back to Ms. Tuscany for any additional or closing comments.
Okay. Well, thanks again to all of you for joining us today. I'd like to ask Ernie or Barry, do either of you have any other comments you'd like to make before we close?
Yes, Sally, I would.
Okay.
On the final slide of the presentation, slide 59, we list a number of publications that could be helpful. One is the I don't see it. the stored procedures through the call and beyond, one of the things that you'll find with the implementation of the tool is that you're going to spend a lot of time with WLM, managed stored procedures installation. So that was a very instrumental red book. And the other is the IBM DB2 Data Archive Expert for ZOS Red Book SG24. Within that, there is a section on not only installation and configuration of Grouper, but it also takes you through a couple of more scenarios, including there's a scenario that's described in the Red Book that shows the unit of work log crawl. So I would highly recommend those two Red Books for your further information.
Okay, Ernie. I do see the second one down, I think, is the one you referred to, DB2 for ZOS stored procedures.
And the first one, SG24-7080,
yep,
is the Data Archive Expert Red Book.
Yep, very good. Okay, Tony, if there's no other questions there in the queue, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us. Thanks to Ernie and Barry for your time, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you.
This does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your line at any time. Have a good day.